It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
You know, the worst thing about doing these.
Well, just doing them, obviously.
No. But there's... I mean, the worst aspect of that.
Okay. What is it?
I always feel like I've just done one. Right before.
That is true.
So I'm already tired of doing it.
Yeah.
Like, do you think it's possible...
It's come one after the other.
...that we're doing all of them at once?
I don't know. I suppose. Anything's possible. That's
kind of horrific in its way.
Well, let's just not think about it.
This is some sort of imprisonment. This is our Sisyphean task. We have to push this podcast up the hill, but then it keeps falling back down.
That is a hilarious joke, by the way, the story of Sisyphus. Hilarious. I remember when I was first told that joke, I was 6 years old. My dad told it to me. And I'd never get tired of people hearing people tell it. Some people tell it a little different. Like, you've got that little twist that you like to put in it. It's funny. But I still like the way Dad told it.
When I was a kid, like, I love... A lot of jokes when you're a kid are just jokes that were grown-up jokes for the previous generation.
Yeah.
But also they're jokes... I mean, and then there's, like, the dumb, like, the kid just learns what a joke is, and they're like, you know.
Sure.
Why did the bat cross the road? It didn't, because it's a bat, and it can fly. Like, you know, dumb shit like that. But then there's a phase after that where they learn the actual structure of the joke.
Sure, sure.
And can make a genuine, coherent joke that's just not very good. And you just reminded me when you talk about Sisyphus and all this. I remember one from elementary school. They also frequently involve scatological humor.
Yeah, usually.
Or sex, but in the most ambiguous way possible because none of us knew what sex was yet. So, like, there were a lot of them that would, like, involve a hooker and then somebody would have sex. But that's the thing. It's like, they go and have sex and then we're like... We aren't gonna like that. They do what hookers do, you know, that thing,
yeah.
And then we'd move on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so this one is a guy dies and goes to hell, and he's like, "You're in hell. It's gonna suck. You're gonna be stuck for eternity. But you get to pick. We have various rooms, and you get to pick which torture you want."
Oh. How polite.
And so he says, okay. And they go to the first room, and he opens the door, and there's people in there just eating shit. Just plates of it.
That's...
And he's like, yeah, that's terrible. I don't want that.
Yeah.
And so they go to the next room.
They're not
going to
get better, I have a feeling.
And there's people who are stirring shit into, like, coffee or something, so it, like, it's liquefied, and then they have to drink it. And he's like, that's also terrible. I don't like this one either. And they go to the third one. See, even at this ripe age, you know that it's always in threes.
Mm.
The third one is a guy who's just standing there up to his waist in shit. There's a ton. And he's got a cup and he's drinking. And he's like, what are you doing? And the guy says, I'm drinking coffee. Now, I was told as a kid, I feel like you need to put in a thing here where you need to specify that it's regular coffee and not shit-filled coffee. Because even as a kid, I was like, he's drinking the shit coffee. But he's not. That's not part of the joke. So I feel like, this is not how it was told to me, but I feel like the guy should say, just like regular coffee?
Yeah.
And the guy's like, yeah, just regular
just
coffee.
Regular coffee.
So he's like, okay, I'm picking this one.
Arabica beans.
Yeah. So he's like, I'm picking this one. Like, okay, so then they bring him in there, like he wades in, so he's up to his waist in it, and somebody brings him a cup of coffee, and he goes and he takes a sip, and then over an intercom thing you hear, coffee breaks over, everybody back on your heads. See? Like, it's a joke, and it works, and it makes sense. This is not good. Like, it's... A child, like an elementary school child, invented that joke. Except, it also could be somebody's dad. Like, we always talk about dad jokes right, not being right. funny. That's, right. That's a specific kind of, like, trashy dad.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
Because I should specify, as the joke was told to me, it was the word shit. In every instance that I said, that was specifically the word, not poop. Not anything else. It was shit. And shit's one of those early curse words that, like, with the wrong parents, you totally get that one.
Right.
So. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that opens with a child's poop joke before even introducing the show.
Yeah.
I am Evil Tony.
And I'm Evil William.
And we don't know what episode this is.
We do not.
It's not our job.
Nope.
That's regular Tony and regular William. And for those of you confused about that, regular William is... I mean, regular William... Evil William is regular William, except Evil William takes pennies and never leaves pennies.
That's right. Never leave a penny.
And Evil Tony is regular Tony, except for... all the murder. Well, most of the murder.
Plus goatees.
Yeah, and everybody's got goatees, but that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you just joining us, it's not going to get better. there's a hat. It's magic. It has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Folks, sad folks, pathetic folks, ugly folks, right into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that.
Brief. Very brief.
The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. Those two losers draw the note cards out of the hat, read them on the air, talk about them until they're bored, do that for about an hour. That's supposedly the show, but they spend a lot of time not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And when they can't do it, the hat magically transmogrifies us into doing this shit over here. So, you're welcome, I guess. Meanwhile, here is a joke that my grandparents, my mother's parents, told to my parents, and I was allowed to overhear, that they just tickled them to death. And that was also big. I then went and told it at school a lot because I'm like, grown-ups think this is funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you will find, not only is it not funny, it's not super that much different than the other one.
Okay.
So.
Here we go. I'm ready.
There was this man, and he was working in a factory.
Okay.
And it was in the middle of winter. It was very cold outside. And during the shift, they had a break, and they went outside for their break. I don't know why. Probably would have made sense if it was, like, for a cigarette or something. I don't know. But he went outside.
Okay.
And while he's outside, getting some fresh air or whatever, he sees this little... Well, he hears, cheep, cheep, cheep.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes and he looks, and there's this little baby bird in the snow.
In the snow. Huh.
And he's concerned. The bird just goes, cheep, cheep, and there's no other birds around or anything. Little baby. So picks it up, and with, like, his mittens, kind of warms it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts cheeping more as it gets more warm. It's you know, happier. It's cheep, 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 cheep.
Mm-hmm.
And So he feels better now. He got warmed up. But then the whistle blows and breaks over. You got to go back.
Oh, yeah.
And he can't take the bird with him.
No.
So he doesn't know what to do. He's going to leave it to freeze or whatever.
Right.
And he sees nearby, because it's abutting some fields, whatever, there is a fresh, still steaming cow pie in the field, like just on the other side of the fence there.
I see.
And so he takes the bird and he sets the bird in the cow pie because it's warm.
Sure.
And the bird's fine with it. Cheep, 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 yeah, cheep.
Bird doesn't care.
Guy goes back in to his job. The bird's just happy as anything. He just cheep, 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 cheep. But eventually, a fox hears the cheeping and goes to the cow pie and sees the bird and eats the bird.
Eats the bird?
Yes.
Mm.
And there are three morals to this story.
Okay, let's hear them.
One, it's not always your enemy that puts you in the shit. Two, it's not always your friend that pulls you out of the shit. And three, when you're in the shit, keep your mouth shut. Ha, 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 ha. And that's the only joke I can remember from my grandparents that is not, in hindsight, racist. So. The others frequently involve accents that I won't go on. But, like, I mean, it's a little less vulgar than the other one. And it has a slightly better story structure. But I don't think you could say it was a better joke. But, like, all the adults involved were quite tickled with this joke.
It seems like it would be funny to a person of a particular cultural milieu.
Or a particular head trauma.
No, yeah, I mean, just a particular cultural experience.
Well, and the thing is, these are some West Coast elite, rich, snobbish motherfuckers. Those are my grandparents. So
I guess.
Because, like, when I worked at Casey's for that summer, and there was a farmer guy who would come in there and just hang out, mostly to hit on the female cashiers, I bet he would just hang out with us. That totally sounds like a joke he would tell me.
Oh.
Were they slumming, maybe? I mean, was that, oh, because I'd never heard my grandparents say shit before.
I don't know.
That was a thing. And I think, to a degree, that may have been why my parents found it funny. It was just funny to hear my grandparents say shit.
Mm.
But I don't know. Yeah. So, a lot of bad jokes out there.
Yes, there are.
My life has changed such that I don't experience them nearly as much anymore.
What do you mean?
I don't run into a lot of... I mean, I run into... They're groaners. And those are the kind of jokes that are, like, almost so bad they're good kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But jokes of the sort I just told you. And, I mean, as I could tell you when my barber used to say, involving a cat, and it's terrible. And it also was one of those that, like, I didn't get till years later because it had, like, naughty undertones that I wasn't even aware of. That are just dumb. It's like, it works, but it's not funny. And I don't feel like I encounter those nearly so much anymore.
Well, it seemed like my dad, in his interactions with people, it was pretty common for someone to come up and say, "Hey, I've got a joke to tell you," or just in the course of a conversation would tell a joke. And I don't remember that being true for me growing up, where, I mean, like you said, when you're a little kid, maybe you'll hear a joke and you'll tell it to kids or whatever, but, like, you know, in my teenage years or whatever, it wasn't that common, really, to sit and tell jokes to each other.
See, I feel like it was, but that was the thing. If something starts with, "You want to hear a joke," usually it sucks.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that I don't introduce mine now, but I'll be like, you know, so-and-so said this thing. For instance, Jackie Cation, the comedian, talks about how her dad, anytime they're driving and they pass by any cows, he'll say, "Those cows are outstanding in their field.
Yeah.
And it always cracks him up. And to me, like, that's not a bad... That's like a groaner. That's the thing. Like, oh, God, you know? That's not like, hmm, you put that together and I see how it is. It's just not that funny. Like, it's not that, you know?
I usually save that one for farmers if I see them out there.
They're also outstanding in their field. I save that for Nobel Prize laureates. People seldom laugh. I'm like,
they
that
just nod their heads.
That physicist is outstanding in his field.
Yes, he is. He just won a Nobel Prize.
Physics.
Good job. Good job.
Also, you ever watch I Love Lucy?
Sure.
I think there might only be 2.5 plots.
Well,
in I Love Lucy.
That many?
Maybe.
Maybe 2.5.
Lucy wants to do something. No, so we'll start the other one. Lucy wants to buy something. And Ricky says no. And so she buys it anyway in some fashion. Or comes up with a scheme to get it. And it all goes to hell. And she usually still gets it at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's one.
Okay.
Two, Lucy wants to do a thing outside of the home.
That's not buying something.
Yes. It's not shopping.
Okay.
Like an activity, usually. I mean, the classic one is she wants to be in his
show. Show, yeah.
But there's, you know, I want to get a... I think there's somewhere she wants to get a job and things like this. Ricky says no. She does it anyway. It fails horribly. And we have to deal with Ricky, and he's fine with it, and then we're done. And the variant on that is...
Is this the half?
Yeah, this is the half, because it's essentially do something, but it's a specific subset. She wants to meet someone. That comes up a surprising amount.
Like a celebrity that he knows.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. That somebody's going to be somewhere, and so she comes up with a scheme and does it. And it's weird. And again, the anthropologist in me is fascinated a little bit, because I'm like, because in I know, because this is the U.S., and that's a U.S. show. It's not like when I watch the U.K. ones or whatever. Like, I am confident life looked nothing like this in that era.
Not for most people.
But
anyway.
This is absolutely what television and film wanted us to believe life looked at in that era. And both of those things are fascinating artifacts.
Yep.
And don't get me wrong, they were funny, he said as though he was asking you. They were well performed.
Yeah.
They were just terribly written. But, like, there was a lot, well, for the most part. Fred was kind of dead weight, but it's not like he got a lot of great lines.
Now I want a t-shirt that says, Ricky says no.
Ricky says no.
Because that's all he did was say no. And maybe get mad, but not that mad.
People will just think you're doing a weird Little Britain ripoff, though. Because there's in Little Britain's sketch comedy thing, and there's a recurring sketch they do with one of the characters is working at various places that are computerized, and somebody wants something, and she types it in the computer, and she goes, computer says no. And so they can't have whatever they want.
Computer says no.
Yes. The one I remember was she was a travel agent. And there's like, can I go to such and such on this day? And she's like, let's see. Computer says no. I can get you to some other horrible place at this other time. It's like, I don't want that. What about this one? How about if I do that? Computer says no. And so that was like the catchphrase. Because this came up because Catherine Tate, famous comedian, sketch comedian, but not on that show, was accosted in an airport one time with somebody who recognized her and asked her to do her catchphrase. Specifically, computer says no, which is not only not hers, but it's done by a man in drag.
Oh.
And then the sad thing is apparently she did it.
Why not?
She wanted to be free. So what? Ow! What are... Evil Ezzy, what are you doing? Yeah, this was a good ultimate goal. All right. I thought you wanted to snuggle with me, but you just wanted to climb every mountain or whatever. So this is also part of what makes this version evil, is I'm just wasting your time with pointless digressions. But I have sated myself on that, so go ahead and draw a thing from a thing.
Is it over there?
Is it? Why?
Because.
Why would that be?
Reasons.
Oh, reasons.
Reasons.
Because reasons. Jazz wants to know.
And if they're chocolate covered, they're called Raisinettes.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that was a funny joke.
Not bad. When you were a kid, was there some way of looking at the world which is quite different for you now that you are an adult?
Yes, I used to look at the world from a height of like 4 foot, and now I generally look at it from a height of more like 6 foot. This is an odd question. It's ambiguous, which sort of makes sense, but I have a hard time approaching it. I'm like, how did I look at the world? I'm always fascinated looking at kids nowadays. The idea that adults have limitless resources
well,
is always fascinating.
You used
to
have a different perspective on drugs and drug use.
Yes, till I had dental surgery.
Yeah. So that's one. That's something.
That is true. That is true. That one's a big one. I did love, I had, I think like most people, probably not you, I had, well, first of all, when I was younger, but also when I was younger as recent as a few years ago, I still believed in the concept of virginity. Whatever. But when I was younger, I had rules about when I would be willing to lose my virginity. And I remember from an early age that I thought waiting till marriage was a little... I didn't particularly care about that. Like, that even... Because I was raised in a liberal enough family that even for me that was sort of an old-fashioned notion.
Okay.
But I was pretty confident I would wait till I was engaged to someone.
Sure.
To lose my virginity. And then when I got older... I amended that to I'm going to wait till I'm in love to lose my virginity.
Mm-hmm.
And then some years after that, I settled on my final one, which was I'm going to wait until a circumstance that I am very confident I will not look back on with regret as to lose my virginity.
But by then you thought that perhaps you wouldn't necessarily have to be in love to be in that kind of
necessarily, yeah. And I mean, ultimately, that was what happened. And it was with somebody that, I mean, I loved enough that we said I love you. I mean, it was with a girlfriend at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember that at a certain point I was like, I don't think this virginity thing is about, you know, oh, special commitment or anything. I'm like, I think it's just something that like 10 or 20 years later I don't want to go, damn, that's how I lost my virginity. And so I didn't, and I don't. Like, I look back on it, and I'm like, I mean, that relationship obviously fell apart because I eventually married Trish. But the experience, I'm like, no, it was a good experience. I think that was a good. I'm not ashamed or embarrassed or frustrated by that story. But I did always find that interesting, that over the course of a couple decades, really, that sort of switched. She loves your boots. I know she really loves your boots. Ezzy is rubbing herself on William's leather boots. Probably just they don't smell enough like her is what she's doing. She's marking you.
Mm.
She's saying, Ezzy's saying, you my bitch.
When I was younger, well, we've talked about, I think, how I was raised in a particular culture and for a good decade after I left home, didn't realize I was going into a very different culture. So,
because you didn't have Rumspringa like most of the other children.
That's right. So issues of status that I to this day don't have very much sophistication understanding, issues of
attitudes of statues, he still doesn't.
No, like just a variety of things that I don't...
Statistics of Oedipus.
That I don't get. But outside of that, outside of a big culture shock, realizing, you know, that there are all these rules about interacting with other people that I didn't even know. I think when I was a kid, I thought that... it's tricky because the way we were raised, very much questioning authority. And I mean, you know, I come at being an anarchist very honestly based on how I was raised. But I did think, you know, the United States was like the best country in the world. And that the politicians were smart, good people that, you know, earned the place they were in because they were smart, good people. You know what I'm saying? I had all those very old-fashioned ideas about America and the politicians who were in Washington and in Iowa State House and, you know, just very, I don't know what you would call it, white bread kind of perspectives on politics.
Yeah.
Of course, as I got older and I learned more about things that were going on contemporary to me, but also the historical things that led up to those contemporary events, I realized, wow, that was super naive. And I don't even know why I had those attitudes, because like I said, my father in particular, very distrustful of just about any type of authority in any kind of way, whether it's a church authority or a business authority or government authority. So we were very much raised with that kind of suspicion of authority. But somehow we were also raised with the notion of, but you can trust those guys, you know, because they're good, decent people.
Well, and I do think that the concept of corruption, not just falsehood, but the concept of corruption is something that comes later to a kid.
Yeah.
Because when you start off, everything is true. And if somebody tells you something, it's true.
Yeah, you don't have any reason to doubt
it. And then eventually you figure out that lying is a thing. And eventually you figure out that you can lie.
Yeah.
And in the same way that, like, initially you get told things by grown-ups and you think you have to do it, and eventually you figure out you cannot do it.
Yeah.
And things might happen differently. But I think those still seem special, because the big one, I think, is the concept of fairness. Kids don't learn that until later. I remember when the neighbor children learned the concept of things being fair.
Mm-hmm.
And then they still haven't hit the point where they have figured out that fairness is like probability. It is something we can measure, but it is by no means a factor specifically.
Right.
Like, nothing is inherently fair unless we work to make it fair, and lots of things are unfair. And so I think that's the same kind of thing. Like, the idea that people could lie is a thing you get pretty early. But the idea that somebody could rise to prominence and power and influence specifically based on careful and creative lying.
Right.
Is a much later concept.
Right. And I grew up in an environment where this was another thing that I grew up thinking, was that the biggest problem in my growing up was that we didn't have a lot of money.
Yes. Or running water.
But that was really the only problem. Like, in every other way, we had a great life. You know, we got along, and we got along with our neighbors, and, you know, school was fun. And it was like, okay, so we're a little poor. You know, that just means this, that, and the other thing, and those things aren't even so bad. So I generally thought that the whole rest of the world really had a life that was as good or better than mine.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really have a concept that some people had it a lot worse. I didn't have a concept that people who weren't Caucasian had it worse because of that. I did have a sense that women had it a little worse, because all of my friends were girls and they would tell me what kinds of things they had to deal with that I didn't have to deal with. So that I had a sense of. And I remember my mom struggling with some things, especially since she was overweight. And I remember little kids would say things about how she looked, and I remember how she responded to how sad she it made her sad to hear little kids talk like that, and whatever. So, you know, I was sensitive to some of the things that women went through, and some of the things that, you know, body image things, because my mom struggled with those things.
Yeah.
But not like someone who's not white, or someone who's not heterosexual, because that was something I didn't really have any concept of when I was growing up, that was even a thing. I mean, sometime in high school or something, I understood, oh, there are some people like that. No big deal. I didn't think anything of it. But even when I learned that was a thing, it didn't impact. I didn't think to myself, gosh, I probably know somebody like that, and they're probably hiding it, and they're probably really sad. I didn't think anything like about that. And probably didn't until well into college. I mean, the first person I met who was openly gay was openly gay. I mean, he didn't have any issues with it. He didn't seem to have any problems with other people. It took me some time to realize, oh, not only are there people like this, more people than I realized, probably people back home that I knew were gay and didn't feel like they could say. I mean, that was a whole thing that I had to sort of.
I feel like there's some punctuation in what you say. Maybe people back home that you knew were gay.
Right. We're gay.
Sorry. The way you phrased it was like, people back home that I knew were gay.
Oh, no, that I didn't know.
And I'm like,
sorry.
No.
Right.
You didn't?
I didn't know.
People back home that you knew
who were gay.
Were gay.
Right, right. The reason I didn't know was because they didn't feel like they could tell people.
And that, I mean, in high school I had my four closest friends were these four females who all, well, most of them, were openly bisexual, but it was they only dated like men and stuff like that. It was one of those things, like that was just a thing you said that was like, if you were a girl, it was kind of sexy or whatever. The only actual gay person I knew in high school was a friend of mine who came out, and it was like very quietly to me and just like a couple other people, and was really nervous about it, and I didn't understand that. Because I was totally fine, but he's like, don't tell people or whatever. And then as time went on, and while I was in high school, some really terrible legislative attempts happened. And I suddenly discovered, holy shit, there's a lot of homophobic people around
this
here.
This is a thing.
Now I understand why he's kept his mouth shut.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's something I
but
had
But that was like the only person that I knew at that point. Now there are people now that I see on Facebook, and it turns out they're gay. But there was never any indication at the time, except there's ones that I'm like, and a lot of times it's things like there's one that he loved to talk about heterosexual. He loved to talk about chicks, and you know, he really liked boobs and stuff like that. But like, he never particularly dated anyone or anything. And now it's like,
that explains some things.
But yeah, I only knew the one at the time, and then I went to Grinnell, you know, so they were coming out of the woodwork. I mean. Everybody was gay at Grinnell.
Well, so yeah, it was basically things that apply to race, heteronormative stuff, and in general having a more positive perspective on particularly American government.
Yeah.
Like, again, you know, I've pretty much been an anarchist all my life, but the way I was raised was, yeah, but you don't have to worry about it because... You know, if you live out in the country, the government never really bothers you. You have to pay property taxes. You can pretty much do whatever you want. But then I had to realize, but what about all those other people? What about some poor people, you know, people who are oppressed because of their socioeconomic status, because of their race or their heteronormative situation? So, yeah, if everybody's life was as good or better than mine, maybe I could just ignore it. But I couldn't. Because of there were so many people who had it so much worse off than I did in the United States, because of things going on in government that were terrible, that everyone knew was terrible, but that nobody was doing anything about. So yeah, I had to realize a lot, and it was over a long period of time too, because it's not like there was one thing I learned and I thought, wow, I need to look into this, and then I learned a whole bunch of stuff. I learned that one thing, and I had to sort of absorb that. And then I was ready to maybe learn the next thing a year later, you know. So it took a long time and kind of a slow burn to sort of go, oh, so this is a whole system that's harming specific people. And if I wanted to, I could ignore it because I'm white and I'm male and I'm heteronormative. But I don't
Wait,
feel...
Wait, that's an option?
I guess.
Wait, why am I just hearing about this now?
You know it's an option.
Holy crap, my life would be so much easier. I didn't know about this.
But I couldn't do that. I couldn't just ignore it.
So. I used to believe that the crust of the bread was where all the nutrients were. You know why I believed that?
Someone told you, I'm sure.
My
your
fucking
mom.
Mother told me this. Told you. She doesn't even remember this. She told me this. She gaslit the shit out of me. I only figured it out less than 5 years ago. And I'm not saying I went around, but like all... This seems little. But here's the thing. It's always been a deal when people have sandwiches with the crust cut off. And it's sort of a universal trope of like a sign of being childish or childlike or wimpy. Like that's always the especially in a man situation. Like if a teenager's mom cuts the crusts off his sandwich, he's just a little wussy mama's boy thing. And it shows all the way through television and movies and things like this. And in my head, there was this whole dimension that, like, all these are terrible parents. Like, that they suck. I'm like, that's the nutrition. Like, that's so... And that these people... And it's all just supposed to be that, like, the crust is not as tasty. The crust is not as soft. Mm-hmm. The crust... Like... But I had this whole other nutritional dimension to it my whole life. And it wasn't... And nobody told me... That wasn't true. I literally just thought about it one day.
Okay, but it's wasteful, though, isn't that? That's a
no, no. It's still, and I mean, I don't cut the crusts off now or anything. No, but I'm just saying, like that trope always had different layers of meaning to me than anyone else. And nobody told me. I was just one day. I was like, how would that work? And the answer is, well, it wouldn't. The crust is just the more cooked part.
Yep.
On the outside, mm-hmm. You dumbass. I don't know why, but like that just messed the day. I was like, hey, wait a second. Like, was mind blowing because it just was, and I had analogs to it because like that was the thing with like fruit and stuff, like the skin of the fruit supposedly has more nutrients and all this. Mm-hmm. Which, now that I think about it, could also be like... A lot of the fiber is in the skin. So, I mean, that could be a thing. But... So, it just sort of made sense to me. The shittier outside part is the healthy part. I mean, that is sort of how life works.
Yeah, right.
But then one day, I was just like, wait a second. And I was like... And it's just immediately... I just get this image of, like, there's dough in a bread pan and it's baking. And, like, inside, vitamins are going to the edge. Outside. And I'm like, what? And it's like, I'm a 30-something. Why is this just occurring to me now? And I ask my mom about it. My mom doesn't remember having told me this. I'm just like, fuck you, old woman. You gaslit me hard well into my 30s.
That's a good one.
All right, give me the thing. We've reached the point in the podcast when the kiddies are bored with us. They're like, whatever. All right. This is from Craig, our UK contingent.
Okay.
Because Stu's American. Have you played any legacy-style board games where the game evolves with each playthrough?
I don't know what that means.
I do. I'm pretty sure William's answer is no. My answer is also no. We'll get that out of the way. But the best example I have is there's a version... of, I think, Pandemic. It's a variant of Pandemic that is built such that there are stickers that you put on the board. And so when you play, there's a calendar. And when you play a game, It's, you're familiar with Pandemic? We've talked about it. The board
I
game.
Am familiar with
where
it,
there's,
yes.
Yeah. And this is a version of it. And it's the same premise, you know, you're trying to fight epidemics and pandemics and things like that. But certain things will happen in the game that a thing happens that instead of, like, put this card here, it's like literally take this sticker and put it on the board there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an event that happened that was a big enough deal that, like, the next time you play the board game, it's the next year or the next whatever. And that has permanently changed the way the game works.
Hmm.
And you can't adjust it. But how your earlier games of the board game went affect how later versions of the board game went.
That's interesting.
Never
heard of that.
I haven't played any, like I said. I knew somebody who had that, and I think they played it for a while. I think my sister-in-law had that. My wife and my sister-in-law got really independent. This is the thing. So, I don't like zombies. I don't mean, like, as friends or whatever. Like, I don't like the narrative device of zombies.
Okay. Because I was going to get on you for being bigoted there.
Zombies.
Yeah.
But, yeah. No. Like, I don't like zombie movies.
Gotcha.
I don't like zombies. And it's, I mean, and I should, it's not a deal breaker. I watch Shaun of the Dead was a great movie and stuff like that. But in general, it's not my thing. You know, it's like, do you like this kind of movie? I don't like zombie movies. I don't like zombie TV shows. And I've always wondered about that a little bit. And some of it is I think they're boring.
Yeah.
Another problem is in a lot of things, they're metaphors, always. But it's so fucking heavy-handed.
Yeah.
And it's also metaphors for shit that I don't so much. And they're not, it's not an interesting metaphor.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's frequently consumerism. Or communism. I'm like, oh yeah, what does it say about those things? Well, it says that we're all just mindless zombies. Oh, okay. Like, I see that now. Like, that's not...
And they're going to take over the world.
Yeah,
and...
I'm like, okay, so I got that from the setup. Not even the movie. I got that from the back of the box.
Yeah.
So now what? So I don't give a fuck. But also, often... Zombie movies and zombie TV shows, Walking Dead especially, the zombies aren't really the bad. Like, it just shows you. It's a post-apocalyptic thing. It shows you what humans can do, how evil they are. And I really don't give a fuck about that. Never have. Don't enjoy it. Don't find it interesting. Fuck off.
Gotcha. And agree. I agree with that.
But here's the thing. I recently realized... I don't think I like epidemics.
As a narrative device.
Yeah, as my friend. Some of his friends are epidemics. No. Again, the horror movie thing. Like, the horror movie's about, like, a strain of virus or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Which frequently is a zombie movie. But the ones that aren't.
Sure.
I just don't... And, I mean, and there's also variants... that aren't zombies, but that are still, like, supernatural. Like, oh, but that turns them bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, hive mind things. Like, oh, now anyone... And you can't tell. That's often... But you can't tell who's what. And I don't know. I don't like those. And I feel like... there's something there. Because zombies are a subset of that, in my opinion.
Sure.
Almost always.
I agree.
But I don't... I just explained to you why I don't like zombies. I don't know exactly why I don't like... epidemic stories.
Well, I mean...
And it's not illness stories, per se. But it's the one where... It's the contagion stories.
Yeah, do you think it's any different? I mean, it could be just the same thing where it's either not saying anything at all that you can discern, or what it is saying is so simple-minded and straightforward.
Well, except the thing. I was... zombie movie makes shitty metaphors, but also that's what it so often is a metaphor. I watch plenty of things that aren't saying anything that I like just fine. It's
okay.
It's when zombie movies are trying to have a message, that message is often really boring.
Yeah, right.
But
epidemic movies are almost always trying to tell some kind of story about the government or about corporations,
well,
or about...
And I would almost think that was the thing, because you also know I don't like especially horror movies and thriller movies that are just about how shitty humans are. I want the devil to be involved in some shit like that. And with epidemics, that's almost always the case. Oh, we tested on the chimp, and now the chimp's blood sprayed on us and whatever.
Hubris.
Yeah.
Typical hubris story.
But not always. I saw an episode of a TV show, won't say which one, in which two brothers came to a town. No, but it was an episode that involved essentially a demonic virus. Mm-hmm. That it would infect people and then they would be on the demon side. Mm-hmm. And it was very much like all the other ones, like, oh, who can you, do they have it in them? You don't know. You know, it's, were they bitten? Kind of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I did not like it. And that was what really got me on this thing. I'm like, I don't like, and I mean, I didn't like it because it's not a very good show. But I also didn't like it because I don't like that storyline. And I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I'm curious. But yeah, this is a relatively new revelation, so I'm going to have to play with it a bit. But yes, Legacy board games. I don't know a lot of other ones. I have just enough neuroses that part of my problem with the Legacy board games is, well, there's two things. One, I feel it gets limited again. It's a little bit like the stupid VCR games from the 90s. Once you've played it, you know what's on the tape. Mm-hmm. And so it's like it's going to go the same. And obviously, there's difference. Oh, this time you're the one in the room when that happens or whatever.
Right.
But you still know, like, oh, that's going to come up here. And da, da, da. And it's the same thing with the Legacy. Like, once you've done it, it's sort of a limited number of plays. Or more accurately, you can play through the series and then you can only play the last game over and over again because your board's got all the stuff on it. But I also would be bothered unless it was the same group of people playing it every time.
Mm.
Like, that's a weird thing for me.
Like, it's got to be a continuation of what happened before.
Yeah. And also, I like board games. Not a ton. I don't love board games, but I like board games and card games, things like that. I like them in very different ways and for very different reasons than role-playing games, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this is just a bit of needlessly muddling the two.
Mm.
So I think that's a component too. How? What do you think? How does this sound to you as a concept for a game? Do you play a lot of like board games and shit? I don't know what you and your wife do, except like you watch her play video games.
I used to play.
That's about it.
I used to play board games. I used to be a huge fan of playing Clue.
Oh.
That was what I really liked.
Jacques.
I really liked to play that.
Or as they call it in Europe, Cluedo.
But then,
for some reason.
Then I started, it seemed like everybody I knew got competitive in a way around games that I didn't like.
And
it sort of turned me off to the whole thing. And I guess I didn't love them so much that it bothered me to stop playing them, or else I would have just found other people to play them with.
So, and there are some games that works better for and some games that doesn't work for. I've found there are two groups. There are people who just play them to just fuck around and have fun, and there are people for whom it's a strategy or a tactics thing or whatever.
Well,
and they're very focused.
Yeah, I took Clue pretty seriously. Like, you know, I'd write things down, but I didn't care if I won. I mean, that part was fun for me, and if someone else won, I was always thought that was cool how they did it. Maybe they didn't have to work as hard, or maybe they got lucky. It was always fun if someone else won, just as much as it was fun if I won. But people I played with were taking things way too seriously. So,
but it's Clue, because like that, I'm not going to say everything in Clue is random chance. But everything in Clue is either random chance or a pretty straightforward algorithm.
Right, but
so
remember,
the only thing is getting mad because you lost. Like, there's no way to really play it more intensely than other people, I would think.
The way I played it was, you know, I would keep track of everything that a person, you know, if what each person
it's a logic puzzle.
Said, exactly,
yeah.
And how many cards were shown. So that I could figure out what cards people had. And I had to do it that way or else I would never be able to keep up with the game. But some people would still, they'd either be better at that than me or they'd get lucky or whatever. But I always liked just the process of it. It was like doing a crossword puzzle or something, you know. And someone finished it before I did, that's all. But, I don't know, like I said, I was playing other people and they started taking the thing way too seriously. And so I stopped playing and didn't really miss it. So when Will Wheaton started making his
tabletop
thing, I would watch
it's
some
a YouTube
of,
channel or it's a YouTube show. Check it out.
I would watch some of those. Some of them just at the beginning, just to see what the game was about. But some of them I actually enjoyed watching all the way through. We did get a few of those games and play them. But really, my wife is the bigger gamer all the way around. She likes playing just about everything. And I either watch her play or I will, you know, play with her a video game or a board game or whatever. I'm not. Again, there was just this period of my life where I was playing a lot of games that I didn't get to play very much when I was a kid, but that I liked to play, and they just sort of ran their course, and now I'm not really into it.
I think what it comes down to for me, and this may be what you're saying here too, I don't like competitiveness, and that's built in to most games.
A lot of games, yeah.
But it varies. Like, the great example I have is this board game called Dominion. It's a really fun game. It's a medieval theme, and it's a deck building game. So you have all these cards, and there's like a bunch of different kinds of cards. And for each game, you're gonna pick like 10 out of 30 options. So each game can be very different.
Mm.
And it's all about, you know, you get money, and then you buy cards, and then they'll go into your deck, and they'll come up again, and you're trying to win by getting the things that are worth points and stuff like that. So it's really fun. So as the game goes on, you build your deck and stuff like that. And you play cards. And some of the cards do things to other people. Some of them don't. You know, all sorts of stuff like that. It's really fun. We discovered it. We really got into it. Trish's family really got into it. We were buying all the expansions. We were playing it every time we visited and stuff. It's really fun. But it is not too random. Like, you shuffle your deck, and that's random.
Mm-hmm.
But you're buying cards and things,
mm-hmm.
so you are building your deck.
Mm-hmm.
You are making that decision. So there is a lot of strategy involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so people get really good at it and come up with methods that sometimes are, in my opinion, really boring, but, like, the odds of you winning are quite good.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, that's the thing. I've very quickly got to a point where my goal was never to win. My goal was to have the most fun.
Right, that's
which
always the goal.
In that game, basically involved making things go weird and crazy, which happened to frequently make things just terrible for everyone else. Sorry, something weird is happening. No, whatever that is, that's fine. So, like, the cards that I'm like, oh, this is a card that says you have to discard however many from your hand every time, and I would buy, like, 8 of them, and so they're just constantly coming up, and I was like, god damn it, you have to do this, and shit like that, or this one says you randomly have to switch hands with the person across from you or whatever, and it messes up everybody's plans, but I just think it's hilarious, and there's also other ones where it's like, I play this card, which gives me an extra turn to do this, which makes it this, and look at this, this is amazing, and that's fine, and sometimes those things work, and sometimes I won. Yeah. Often I didn't win, but it quickly became that. And then there are other people, and it got to where, like, you could go online and you could be, oh, you're playing Dominion this, and you got a 6-split this. Like there was shorthand for the strategies. Like, oh, I'm playing blah blah strategy, and just everybody would know.
Hmm.
And so I would play with people who did, and I'm like, this isn't fun.
Well,
to do that, I always lose, and they're not surprising at all.
In Clue. One of the things that made games problematic.
Holy shit, have you ever played Kill Dr. Lucky?
Yeah, I think I have played that.
That's a good game.
But in
especially if you're a big fan of Clue.
In Clue, you there if you play it enough, you start to understand there's a lot of paths to winning that involve deception.
Yeah, yeah.
And that can make people mad.
Yeah.
When they know that whether you won or not, that you fooled them by leading them down a certain path by something you guessed that you knew wasn't a valid guess or whatever.
And so I quickly get into where I like the games. They're often considered more casual games, but the games where it is much more about random chance.
Yeah.
So it's just fun to see what happens. And then the other thing, which is a relatively recent concept in games of this type, cooperative games.
Yes, which
and
I
love. And we fucking
love
those.
I love
those are great. Those are great. Pandemic's a good example. I don't like Pandemic. I don't know. The subject matter I don't like.
Sure.
There's a variant on Pandemic that's... The mechanics are very similar, but it's called Mysterious Island. And I like that one better because I like that theme better. You're on this island and it's slowly sinking. And you guys have to go and get these idols.
They've done that on tabletop.
Yeah.
And it looks like a fun game.
And I like it better just because, I don't know, the whole we have to fight is that it's stressful to me or something. Yeah. Like, oh, these people are dying. I think it's about competitiveness in a lot of cases. And then with role-playing games, not a thing.
Right, right.
Ever. Right. Now that I think about it, maybe that's part of why I'm not into sports as much. I mean, as a spectator thing. Because you got to get behind your team or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, that's about it for us, thank goodness. Unless we are in this just constant hell, in which case we'll start another one in a minute. But in the meantime, you keep listening. I don't know why. But, I mean, I guess enjoy it. And next week, they should be back. So, you know, you do you. And I'm going to fuck off on out of here.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.